Welcome back to another great episode of Comedians in Bed, where comedians can be comedians, and we still don't know what that means, but it just sounds like something you should say on a podcast, man. And I'm so glad for our next guest. I'm kind of envious of our next guest, man, because she could play an instrument, and I only play an instrument in my kitchen when I'm listening to Thundercat. That's the only time I am like musically gifted. Sometimes on the radio when I'm late to work and I need like to hype me up, so I may sing some Bone Crusher or Crime Mob, but this one is no short of musically inclined and very, very funny. I'm so glad that we have her on our show today. And despite technical difficulties on my end, we figured everything out and now we're here. Please, everybody, give it up for Rebecca Jaffe.
Gosh.
What's going on? How you doing today? How you doing today?
I'm doing good. Yeah, it's been a good day so far. Yeah,
that's good. I need to adopt something that you do, which is smile a lot. You smile a lot, but I love it.
I get that from my mom. when she was younger, she once got someone gifted her a pin that says, "I smile because I have no clue what I'm doing." And that is the same for me. It's because I'm always confused and bewildered. So I'm just, yeah.
No, I love it. That's great. And it's something I'm working to get back on is smile more. Because sometimes I just be in my own head and I don't be, it's 8 billion people in the world, but I act like it's not. So
no, I get it. Like I have, when I'm not smiling, I have this thing called resting sad face. It makes me look like I'm just absolutely devastated. People are always asking me like, "Are you okay?" Because I always just look like I'm on the verge of sobbing. Yeah, so smiling's a better default for me.
Yeah. Rebecca, are you born and raised in Chicago?
No, I am not. So I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, but I only lived there till I was 5. And then I was raised in St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay. Is that the scene you're in, or you're in? I thought you were in Chicago.
I am in the Chicago scene now. Yeah, I moved there about 8 months ago for the comedy scene here. I wanted a place where I could grow more as a comic and really try like really creative stuff. I feel like here people are really unafraid to take risks and kind of go for it. I felt like it was a good place to develop my act after graduating college. So that's where I went.
What part of St. Louis are you from? Because I have family there. I don't know who they are or where they live or anything like that. But I always like to claim I have family there. My mom's from St. Louis.
Oh my gosh. So I'm from like the Olivet area. It's kind of like 15 minutes from everything. 15 minutes from like the loop, 15 minutes from the suburbs, like kind of just 15 minutes from everything. And
did you? I didn't take you to be, I say this as a compliment, a country bumpkin, but I was growing up in the country, and now you're St. Louis isn't too country, but now you're like officially a city girl. So how does that
I really like the city. I feel like I never was raised super like country bumpkin. I don't know, my family is not like tough in that way at all. Like none of us sports. My dad was forced to do football once in his teens. I was like on a volleyball team for 2 weeks one time till I caught the ball in the middle of the game. And then I was like kicked off. I was just there like, to wear the shorts because I thought the shorts were cool. But as I was saying, back to the topic at hand, I feel like meant to be living in a city. I feel like with my ADHD, I'm like, I like a lot of stimulation. I like a lot going on at once. But also there is a little bit of country in me, just a little bit. Really like farms. One time I milked a cow and like I use it as a bragging point in every conversation I have. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just really proud of that one time I milked that cow. Like if I might go back and like get a degree in like agriculture or something and like go try to work on a farm because I just really like
animals. So what's the dating app that you would prefer? Is it Tinder or Farmers Only?
Oh my I've never tried Farmers Only. I hate Tinder. I recently deleted my Tinder. I was so overwhelmed. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I am a Hinge girl. For a long time I was a Bumble girl, but I don't know. I feel like Bumble's becoming more like Tinder. I like Hinge. I like Hinge so far. I don't know.
What makes Hinge stand out?
I don't know, because it actually takes some thought to make the profile. Like, it's kind of difficult. You actually have to think about it. Don't know. And like, they actually like have to talk to you to like pique your interest. I don't know. I haven't been on like the apps in a long time though. I've gotten them more recently, and it's like so interesting.
I only go on them and create a profile like when I'm really bored and I feel like judging people, because I feel like it's allowed to judge people on the apps. Like, no, you're not cute. Yes, you're cute. That's what I do all the time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, in the real world, we're judging people all the time. Why not have a place where it's like we're designated to do that? Yeah, and I'll be judged too. It's interesting to see like who likes me and who doesn't. Like, I've noticed like the consistencies and like whose type I am. And it's really interesting. I feel like everyone who swipes right on me is like often like the guys who are in like a D&D league. Like the you know what I mean? That's like the story. Ah, I got the sound effect. I'm so excited.
Last one I had was Hinge, and I get a little bit more response on there, but maybe because it forces you to be honest. Like, I tell people all the time, like, right up there, I'm short. So if you're on this profile and you like me, you already know like what this is. I'm probably not taller than you, so deal with it. But I had to get off because I found somebody I went to elementary school with, and she was cool, but it just wasn't going to go anywhere. So I was like, yeah, let me just get off here.
It felt like, I feel like, yeah, once you start running into the people that you know, it starts getting a little weird. Recently, I saw one of my mom's friends' kids on there, like who I was like childhood friends with. And like, he had a photo with his mom. And I was like, wait, is that my mom's friend on him? What? And then I was like, I need a minute. Yeah.
They need an app where I could date my mom's friends. Like that would be the app that I would sign.
Are your mom's friends?
I mean, no, but they look like they'll go for it. I mean,
you already sort of have mom's approval, right? She approves with them. So they must be like some level of good.
My fault, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I don't know what I was going to say.
That would be a good app. Like if like, you know, like a cougar app. I don't know what it would be for, like for the dudes, but like a cougar app, that would be fire. I would definitely sign up for the cougar.
Oh my God. An app that just goes through your mom's contacts list and just called Date My Mom's Friends. I'm kind of obsessed with that. I feel like that, like, we already have such specific apps anyway. We got Farmers Only. We got like Raya for like the famous people. Why not one for your mom's friends and you? Why not?
Rebecca, are you, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm getting a little Taylor Swift vibes. Are you a Taylor Swift fan?
That's so funny because I do get that a lot. I think Taylor Swift is a wonderful businesswoman. I think she's super smart. Honestly, my taste is not, she's not quite what I listen to. I did used to work in retail though, and we sold a lot of Taylor Swift merch. I sold a lot of Taylor Swift with Taylor Swift quotes. I do get the Taylor Swift thing like a ton. I think she's a remarkable businesswoman, but not, I don't know. Her music is great. It's just not quite my taste. I don't know. I listen to weird stuff.
What kind of stuff do you listen to?
Okay, so I listen to kind of a mix. Lately, I've been in my like early 2000s pop punk phase. Like, I've been listening to Neck Deep a lot. Like, I've been kind of into that. I also, what else do I like? I mean, I think Doja Cat's songs are amazing. They're so good.
You be twerking the Juano. You over there twerking the Doja Cat. Like, is that what's going on over there?
I don't have enough to twerk. There's nothing. I have no material to use. I can't work, but I can stand there and do a like a step touch and appreciate.
Ready to party.
All right, that one. Too long, but
I think the way that she makes use of chords, I'm kind of a music theory nerd. The way she makes use of like unusual chords in her songs is like kind of genius. Like in Say So, the way that they make use of like certain chord structures in there is so unusual, and I think that's why it was such a hit. I also love Fleetwood Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, partly just because I love the drama of everyone dating each other. You know? They just keep switching around.
Yeah. That's what's up. Let me see who I'm listening to. Who am I listening to right now? I listen to a lot of, I guess you can call it motivational rap. Primo Rice, I've been listening to a lot. And there's another, hold on, let me look. Do you know who, how do you say this? Gabby Parafina is?
No, I don't, but I'm going to write it down. I always want new stuff to listen to.
Yeah, I don't, I'm gonna assume it's a guy from the way I look on it, but forgive me if I misidentify. But yeah, Gabby, Parafina. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
And, okay, I'll check that out.
Yeah, that's pretty, yeah, I listen to pretty much everything. But Leon Thomas. I can't get enough of his music. I love him. He did a show on Nickelodeon, but I don't remember what it was called.
Oh my god, wait, did he do Victorious?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah.
I like his music for some reason. I really do. I didn't watch Victorious, but I like his music. I like his music. It's pretty good.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I've heard him like a few times. He's very talented. I haven't watched a lot of Nickelodeon. Like, I was one of those kids who wasn't allowed to watch Nickelodeon when I was growing up. I just like was already a really high energy kid with ADHD and everything, and my parents felt like that would like definitely like stimulate my brain just like way too much. So I just was watching like PBS Kids all the time.
That's funny. PBS. I rather watch Young and the Restless than watch PBS. Anything on PBS, to be honest.
I do love soap operas. Recently, I got on a soap opera kick. My roommate and I have been watching General Hospital.
General Hospital, okay.
And I have never once seen a scene that occurred in a hospital on General Hospital. Watched like 5 episodes so far, and there are many hospital scenes. I don't know what it's about. But
That is funny. What are you watching? Well, right now, I like to if I go past the season, I like to wait till the season about to start to get caught up. So I've been finishing up Abbott Elementary. I've been watching this. I haven't watched it in a while, but it's this show on Peacock. It's called Dr. Death. I guess each season they pick a doctor who was basically like killing their patients in a different way. So I've been liking that. I like that. I like and a new season of Love on a Spectrum. I love that show.
Oh, really? I haven't checked it out. Dr. Death sounds intriguing. I feel like sometimes as comedians, like sometimes we got to watch dark stuff to like just get out of that like mindset that we're always in where everything is funny all the time, you know?
Right. But now the reason why I have brought up music is because like one of the things that you do with your comedic talent is you also bring in your musical gifts to your act on stage. How did you incorporate that? And actually what gave you the courage to do that? Because that's, you know, I know some people do it, but it is still very much so different. So what gave you the courage to do that?
So what's interesting is like, it was kind of a weird, like back and forth journey between music and comedy. So I started out as a theater kid and I was doing a ton of musical theater growing up. I don't know. Yeah, I know. It's something you definitely couldn't tell about me.
No, I'm a theater kid too.
You're a theater kid too. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, I was a theater kid. And then when I was in high school, my younger sibling, Bug, is really, really good at stringed instruments and taught me ukulele. They taught me ukulele when I was in high school. And then I like would play ukulele on and off in college. I would just kind of like be once in a while, I would get a little angsty and be like that college freshman, like writing angsty songs on her ukulele and like bringing them to open mics, like singing about my breakups and stuff. And then I took a gap year during the pandemic. And during that gap year, I started songwriting more than I started writing funny songs. And then I took a break. Then I tried straight stand-up. I was just doing stand-up, no music. I was addicted. I loved it. Then I got my first gig ever. And that's where like it started to mix. I got my first gig ever. And the guy told me, hey, for this, we'd like you to do 7 minutes. At the time, I was like 2 weeks in. So I only had 4 minutes of material, but I knew that I could write songs. So I was like, why don't I write a song to fill the other 3 minutes that like relates to the material in my set? And that's how it came together. And I realized this is actually working for me. And so I started combining the two more from there. And I realized like when I could write jokes that like rhymed, that were set to music, I realized that's more how my brain works. Yeah. And that's kind of how I came up with this whole thing that I do now.
Matter of fact, now that you talk about it, do you ever plan on putting like a, I don't know what the word would be for it, but like, I guess a comedic singing album? And the reason why I ask is because, what is his name? Mark Rebellion? You know who I'm talking about? He goes out like, I want to say New York, and he just makes like these ridiculous songs. Like he'll make the beat like on the spot, and he'll just make up these songs that are just outrageous and crazy, but they're funny. But they're funny to me because I just think it's funny. But he's also kind of being serious, but it makes for a good artist. Like it got him all the way to Coachella. But I don't think he's trying to be funny on purpose. I just think that sometimes what he says is funny. So do you plan on infusing the two and putting like an album out or something like that?
I do, actually. Yeah. So I work with a producer in St. Louis named John Heiserer. He's amazing. He worked with one of my favorite artists, Ricky Montgomery. And we recorded Ode to Tube Man together, and we're actually working together in March. In March, I'm going to go home to St. Louis for a little while, stay with my family and work with John just every day to get this album recorded. I have a bunch of songs in mind. I've been sending him demos already. So that is definitely in process. We're going to make it like, we're going to add like little things, because usually I just play acoustic. We're going to add like little touches that are going to make it like more pleasing to listen to, you know, if you're driving in the car, or going on a run, something that you can actually listen to like leisurely. So I'm really, really excited about that. I feel like I've been waiting a while to do an album, and it feels like it's time. And he's just an incredible producer, and it's just a great fit.
Yeah, man. Congratulations. So you're in the studio. What is it like to be in the studio with you? Do you have tea? Are you smoking ganja? Are you doing a line of coke?
That's so funny.
It's open like in the background. What are you doing?
That I am sober in the studio. I am. No, what we'll do, we have a really interesting process in the studio. Just me and John, it's at his house. He has this amazing at-home studio. He has incredible equipment. So I go over there and we'll work for a little while. Like we'll record everything and then we'll start working on those little touches. He'll add things. He's just like kind of a genius in that way. We'll be like sampling things, figuring out what's a good fit here, what's a good fit here, what are the harmonies. And then we'll take breaks every once in a while, like whether it's to go get food. But one thing we really like to do is go on bike rides in between like hours of recording. We'll ride bikes. And then also sometimes we'll sit and watch I Think You Should Leave, you know, with Tim Robinson. And so those are kind of just our traditions that we do. We get, there's this place in St. Louis, Crazy Bulls and Wraps. We often go there and get food there. So those are the things that we do, really. Yeah.
So bike rides are going to be the way to a Grammy.
Yes. No coke in this studio. I have not done like crazy drugs. The thing is I'm already on so much prescribed stuff that okay. I just feel like I'm already on the Ritalin. I'm on Prozac. I'm on that. I don't know how that's going to react with like stuff that's not approved by the FDA. So I don't mix it.
Hey, what's not approved by the FDA is approved by the streets, and the streets say.
Well, you know me. That. If it's approved by the streets, then it's approved by Rebecca Jaffe. I don't know. I don't know. I took my Ritalin like very shortly before doing this, so it's still sinking in. As we were, what were you watching?
That was like the best political slogan commercial ever.
That's the worst commercial. What would it be a commercial for? Is it a commercial for drugs? Like, if it is, I'm the worst spokesman ever. I would be a popular though. I feel like I would be incredible because I do have a lot of Ritalin because it's prescribed to me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I could like, pretty easily pull it, but I wouldn't want to. I don't know.
Yeah, you can easily make 500 in one night if you go to the club.
I have to like pay like about that much to go see the psychiatrist to get more Ritalin. So I end up just like pretty much breaking even. I might as well keep the Ritalin. My Ritalin's nice. It's long acting. It's the nice stuff. I mean, do people use Ritalin in the club? I feel like you're not supposed to concentrate while you're in the club. Like,
well, you know, it's so much going on when you're upstage. If someone slipped me a riddle, like a little half of it or a little crumb, yeah, a little dust of it, I would take it. I would probably take it.
I make sure to have my Ritalin before performing because
yeah,
it's hard for me to do like any type of crowd work if I can't pay attention.
Okay, yeah, that is true. Yeah. So you do have a single though on Spotify. What was like that process like? And the reason why I ask is because Spotify I feel like is more artist friendly based. And so like if you were to put a comedy album on there or any type of art on their Spotify, I would recommend that to be for anybody. So how was that process of putting that single on there?
It was good. I had a lot of guidance from John for that. I ended up using a service called DistroKid, which is great. It's super easy to use. I recommend it for like anyone trying to put stuff on Spotify. I it's really interesting having a single on Spotify. You know, it was interesting having to figure out how to like put in my artist description. How do I summarize myself as a comedian? That was really nice because it gave me a chance to sort of come up with an elevator pitch like for myself.
Yeah.
Trying to pitch the song to editorial playlists. None of them wanted it. but that's okay. I've gotten a lot of listens in Finland for some reason. I don't know why. Finland likes the song. figuring out the album cover, which was like a photograph from like a photo shoot I did with my friend Kev from college. Like it was all a really fun process. It was cool to like have a chance to like summarize myself as an artist and actually like put my work out there for people who aren't in the city where I live.
Yeah, so they can
actually find me in other ways. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, another thing that we talked about was the fact that you did the flyover comedy competition, which is a very popular one there in St. Louis. Did you find it any difficult getting like accepted, seeing that you're from there? And the reason why I ask is sometimes when you're, you know, if you try to get your foot in the door in your hometown scene, they might not look at you or take you seriously because they saw you, you know, when you first started, and that may be burned into their head. So
yeah.
How was that process like, and how was that festival?
Flyover Comedy Festival is a wonderful festival. I recommend it to like everyone I know. For me, yeah, the first time around I did not get in. At the time, honestly, I did not have a good tape. They do have like designated like certain amount of like spots, I think, that they give out to locals. They do make an effort to make sure there's a certain amount of locals on the festival. But you know, they are a little bit selective about who they pick. And first time around, I remember I was so nervous. I wanted to be on it so badly. I was checking my email every day for months until finally I got the email. So sorry, you didn't get in. But, you know, I next year I was like, you know, fuck it. I'll submit again. We'll see what happens. And then I didn't check my email every day. And then it happened. I was overjoyed because it was a big goal for me, you know, coming from start. I started in the St. Louis comedy scene. So flyover was something people talked about a lot. And it was something that I really, really wanted to check off my little list. It was wonderful. And especially like getting to come back home from being in Chicago and getting to see like all my old friends from the scene. Yeah. And like, kind of cool. Cause when I first started in the scene, I'll admit, like I was really socially awkward and I didn't really know people that well. There were a few people who were there for me, like a few mentors, but like, it was nice to finally go there and be like, this is who I am. This is what I do. And everyone like understood it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was really,
I get that. I understand. How did you overcome being like socially awkward at like mics or something like that? Or do you think it was just, this is something new that I'm learning and I'm just going to sit back and relax? And now when you came back, you were more confident in your craft.
Yeah. So what caused me to be kind of socially awkward, along with ADHD, I also have something called an auditory processing disorder, which means that like sometimes if I'm in a stimulating environment, you know, like say a noisy open mic, people will start to say, you know, those videos, like what English sounds like to non-English speakers, or like how the students sound when they talk. Like sometimes people start to sound like that to me. They start to sound a little bit like the adults from Charlie Brown. I can't fully understand what they're saying. And so because of that, I tend to misunderstand what people are saying and then give a completely incorrect response. When I was going to my first few mics, I was a little too confident in my conversations. And I learned over time, like when you're younger and starting out in the scene, you kind of want to be humble and honestly be a little quiet, listen, and just see what people have to say, especially the people older than you. Just give yourself a minute to settle in before you start trying to like be the charismatic one in the space. So I kind of just learned to be a little quiet and just chill out and hang out. And that was how I was able to sort of like work my way into like having friends in the scene and be accepted.
Yeah, no, I get that. I feel like I just started revealing more of myself to people here in this scene. It took a while, but yeah. I didn't really talk at first until now people, now the new comics come up and talk to me and I'll be like, dude, I don't know who you are. I don't you're just a stranger. But I like it though, because like when I was starting up, we didn't talk, you know, it was just like, you just wait till they come talk to you. But I don't think they see it that way. I just think they just like, hey, I like your stuff. Hey, what's up? Like kind of that type of deal, which is fine. It don't bother me. I just don't be knowing who the hell they are. And they think that I know who they are. I think maybe because of social media, and I'll be like, dog, I don't, but I make sure I speak back though. I just, now I'm used to it. I'll be like, okay, this is probably a new comic. So
yeah, exactly. I feel like in comedy, you never know who, I never know who anyone is. So I just try to treat everyone with respect, because you never, ever know who's like the most talented or accomplished person in that room, who might have those connections that you need or who could help you. I feel like as I was able to like get a little more established in the scenes that I'm in, that's when I realized like, okay, I'm not like the new comic anymore. And I kind of did want to help like make the scene more welcoming. When I was in college, I like mentored like my fellow students. Like I would put on a show 2 years in a row. I literally was like the only stand-up comic at my school, so I would have an audition where people came in and like brought a story or a bunch of jokes, and then I would like let them into the show and help them like craft their first set, and then we'd have like a full house where they could perform their debut, you know. There's something really nice about working with new comics and giving them like an environment where they can express themselves. I feel like that's important.
Yeah, I do agree. What made you leave St. Louis to now you're in the Chicago scene? You left one scene that is pretty big and pretty well known. I heard you guys have like a real tough crowd out there. So what made you leave from St. Louis to Chicago, and how has that been going?
You're saying you heard there's a tough crowd like in St. Louis, or like
I hear the crowds are pretty tough in St. Louis.
I love the variation between crowds in different places. So what I really enjoyed the comedy scene in St. Louis, it's a wonderful comedy scene. You can find mics like to go to every night. And yeah, the crowds, like, they can be particular, but I kind of love that. It because it trained me for when I was going to Chicago, like, because people there, the crowds in St. Louis are very honest. They'll laugh at what they like and they won't laugh at what they don't like. And that was like the best gift they could possibly give me. I moved to Chicago because my stuff is pretty weird. And Chicago is pretty weird. I also wanted a chance to be seen by a little bit more industry. And I feel like in Chicago, there are people who know people in New York, people who know people in LA. I felt like I want to move to possibly New York in a few years. So I felt like it would be a good transitional spot where I can meet people who know people while participating in like a really active comedy scene. And yeah. I just felt like there was a really wonderful alt scene here as well. And I definitely am like at heart, I love all the different scenes, but at heart I'm an alt scene girl, you know? I also do sketch comedy as well. And I felt like Chicago was a good spot for that as well.
Yeah. 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 How has it been since you moved, and what are some of the tips and tricks that you use to help get you integrated into the Chicago scene?
Instagram. Oh my God. Anyone who, like, I've had people, friends ask me before, like, how did you book a lot of stuff before getting to Chicago? Before I even moved, before I graduated from college, anytime I would see anyone on Instagram where it said like Chicago comedian, follow, follow, follow. I followed every single Chicago show account I could find. And I DM'd every single one asking, like saying, hi, I'm Rebecca Jaffe. I'm moving to Chicago soon. Do you accept online submissions for your show? I would go to the Lincoln Lodge calendar, find every show on the calendar, look up that show on Instagram, message them on Instagram. And I think making those connections online helped me so much before I got into the scene. Yeah.
So how often were you getting booked when you first got there from making those connections before you got there?
Let me see. That's hard to remember. I'm not even sure. I feel like not a ton. My first month there, I have like my comedy graphics, my little graphics. My first month there was June. I did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7 gigs in a month, you know, my first month there, get some stage time. And then, you know, over time, it's become more and more. And when I wasn't doing the gigs, I was trying to either go to dinner with someone from the comedy scene, grab lunch with someone from the comedy scene, have at least a FaceTime or text conversation with someone in Chicago comedy, or even just like working on something for my single every day, just something to get myself a little bit further.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did you, I'm pretty sure you use the same techniques, but how did you go about making sure that the clubs knew who you are and getting inside of those? Because, you know, somebody might be born and raised in Chicago doing comedy and they kind of look at you and be like, who's this newcomer taking my spot? Like, how did you, you know, make sure that you got your spot in there? Because that's what you came there for.
So I will tell you, clubs are a more recent thing for me. I, like I said, at heart, I'm an alt scene girl. Clubs have been a more recent thing for me. I had my Laugh Factory debut last weekend. I mean, that was, and my goal was to do that within a year of moving to Chicago. And then I've got another one later this week, and then one next month, and then one the month after that. But how I got into the clubs. Okay. So first thing was, it's really through contacts that I knew by making friends in the comedy scene, someone usually has someone's email who might book at those clubs. And so you can sometimes do that. But how I got the Laugh Factory stuff was actually through performing at a mic where a bunch of Laugh Factory producers just happened to be hanging out and they saw my stuff. And before that, I had also messaged them on Instagram asking, you know, if they accept submission. So I, you know, they had heard my name a little bit. And so, just getting your work out there. I will say, like, I feel like for me, a few years ago, I got my first spot at a club, right? I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready at all. After that, I got a spot at Helium, within my first year of doing comedy, hosting. I wasn't ready. It was okay. And then after that, I realized, like, I need to focus on myself and just, like, blinders on. Keep my eyes on the prize. I think if you focus on really developing your own craft and making friends and not as much as and not as much focusing on actually getting into the clubs, that's what gets you into the clubs, really.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. I understand, yeah. Who has the better food, St. Louis or Chicago?
Chicago.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, that's what I feel. I don't like the classic St. Louis foods. Like, have you ever had Emo's?
No.
Emo's pizza, it tastes like cardboard. Everyone there likes it. So much trouble. I feel like someday, like, I'm gonna be, if I ever do, like, make it, like, people are gonna find this interview and they're gonna just be like, she doesn't like Emo's, she can't come back here, god, she's not a real St. Louisan. But, like, it tastes like cardboard. Everyone likes it. One time I was drunk and I was starving, and even then I was like, I can't eat this bullshit.
Yeah.
I really like Chicago food. It's amazing. Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah.
No, I understand. So what's the ultimate, since you do, you're very, you brought in two, like, gifts and infused them together. So what's, like, the ultimate goal with, like, your artistry? Like, is it to do sketch, or is it to just do any and everything that is comedic and music? Like, what is the ultimate goal here?
So the career trajectory that I relate to the most to, have you ever heard of Flight of the Conchords?
No, but for the sake of this interview, yes.
Yes. They are a wonderful musical comedy duo that worked together for many years. Now they work separately doing their own projects. Their career trajectory is exactly what I want. They were a comedy musical duo with great music and really funny shows. And they were touring around doing their thing. And then from that, they were able to get a TV series on HBO that in where the plots were, like, vaguely based on them, but with a lot of, like, fun fictional elements. And the plots, the episodes would incorporate the songs that they use from their albums and their touring were incorporated into the plots. And then from there, they had two seasons on HBO. And after that, they went their separate ways and they engaged in really whatever projects they wanted. From there, one half of the duo, Brett McKenzie, he went on to write Am I a Man or a Muppet and win, like, a Grammy. And Jermaine, for the other half of the duo, he literally, like, produced What We Do in the Shadows. I mean, he's producing comedy stuff, comedy shows. So my goal is to become a touring performer. And then from there, get my own show, kind of the Rebecca show, something kind of crazy ex-girlfriend-esque, Rachel Bloom-esque, and have a show that involves sketch, involves plot, but also involves my songs. And yeah. So then I can continue to tour while also producing the show. And then from there, I want to become producer, writer, actor. I want to be able to really engage in projects that I'm passionate about. But I think it's I've been trying to figure out what's the best path for me to get there. And I think it's by starting out as a touring performer.
Okay. Yeah. Like, that's a lot to be playing instruments and telling jokes, but I always find it, whether if people actually have an instrument up there or not, or if they just go up there and do some type of musical gift, like rapping or what. I've seen people go up there and rap and rhyme their jokes out, which I think is funny. I think is very it's very unique, and I really value and appreciate it, and I don't know if it's something that I could do, so I always always like it. It stands out the most. Do you think you would ever sign your guitar and give it away after a show?
Oh, my uke. I wish I could play guitar. My fingers.
Yeah.
My fingers hurt. I'm such a pussy about it. But I love ukulele. Would I sign it and give it away? Oh, I don't think I could. I ukulele. Her name is Wilma. She's a beautiful little blue ukulele, and she's perfect, and I love her. I don't think I could ever give her away. Like, I play any other ukulele. People have asked me to play one that plugs into an amp. I won't do it. I play my ukulele. I am attached to her.
No, I understand. As we start to wrap this up here, who is on your, a question I'd ask all my guests, who is on your Mount Rushmore for comedy?
My Mount Rushmore for comedy. Oh, that's hard. Okay. I really love Chris Fleming. I think he's incredible. I don't know if you've ever seen his series, Gale. It's really, really good. And he just does a lot of great musical comedy as well. I also love Maria Bamford. I think she's a pioneer in the comedy industry. I just feel like she's so authentically herself. And then the other two have got to be the, both members of Flight of the Conchords. I think they're incredible. Those are my Mount Rushmore probably.
Okay. What words of encouragement would you give to any comedian that's listening to this right now?
I said something earlier about putting your blinders on. That is something someone told me once. Don't let the competition around you get in the way of developing your craft and focusing on yourself. Put your blinders on and focus on your act. And also, no one can tell you the proper path to find success in comedy. I didn't exactly take the most traditional path. I'm only like just starting out with the clubs. I kind of took more of like a musical route at first. Focus on what path is working for you. It doesn't have to be the traditional path. Go with your gut and really, really focus on taking care of yourself. That should come before anything. My comedy was, it has always been best when I took care of my health and mental health first.
Message.
Rebecca, tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
Oh, why should they listen to Comedians in Bed? Well, I feel like one, it was freaking fun. I feel like we were pretty damn funny. I feel like we had a good time. Also, I feel like as a comedian, I think it's good for, it's good to like listen to other comedians' perspective, or even just as an everyday person. I think there's a lot you can learn from hearing comedians' inner thoughts and learning about their process that you can take into your relationships, into your daily life, into being like a more whole person.
Yeah.
I don't know what I just said, but yeah, that's how I feel. I speak in long sentences, but that's just how I feel. I don't know. There's a lot you can learn. Comedians are the smartest people I've ever met. And I think there's a lot you can learn from being in a conversation with one or hearing a conversation from one.
Rebecca, tell people where they can find you at.
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Reb_Jaffe. That's REB_JAFFE. You can also find me on YouTube, and you can find me on TikTok under, what is my TikTok username? I really should know that. It's at Rebecca Jaffe. You can also find me on Apple Music, and you can find me on Spotify.
That's what's up, man. If you want to watch next week's episode, man, be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel at TYE Comedy. But if you want to see weekly clips, you can always follow us on IG at Comedians in Bed Podcast, or you can listen to wherever you listen to podcasts. We'd like to thank my girl, Rebecca, for joining us here today. Make sure you go ahead and follow her on all things social. Rebecca, man, we appreciate you, and we'll see you guys next week.
All right.